Chapter 79. Aspern. Pardon, my lord, I speak for Sigismund. Franzberg. For him? Oh, for him, I always hold a pardon safe in bank. Sure he will draw sooner or later on me. What is need? Mad project broken? Fine mechanic wings, that would not fly? Durance, assault on watch, bill for Epernay, not a crust to eat? Aspern. Oh, none of these, my lord. He has escaped from Circe's herd, and seeks to win the love of your fair ward Cecilia, but would win first your consent. You frown. Franzberg. Distinguish words. I said I held a pardon, not consent. In spite of Deronda's reasons for wishing to be in town again, reasons in which his anxiety for Mira was blent with curiosity to know more of the enigmatic Mordecai, he did not manage to go up before Sir Hugo, who preceded his family, that he might be ready for the opening of Parliament on the 6th of February. Deronda took up his quarters in Park Lane, aware that his chambers were sufficiently tenanted by Hans Meyrick. This was what he expected. But he found other things not altogether according to his expectations. Most of us remember Retzsch's drawing of destiny in the shape of Mephistopheles playing a chess with man for his soul, a game in which we may imagine the clever adversary making a feint of unintended move so as to set the beguiled mortal on carrying his defensive pieces away from the true point of attack. The fiend makes preparation his favorite object of mockery, that he may fatally persuade us against our taking out waterproofs, when he is well aware the sky is going to clear, foreseeing that the imbecile will turn this delusion into a prejudice against waterproofs instead of giving a closer study to the weather signs. It is a peculiar test of a man's mettle when, after he has painfully adjusted himself to what seems a wise provision, he finds all his mental precaution a little beside the mark, and his excellent intentions no better than miscalculated dovetails, accurately cut from a wrong starting point. His magnanimity has got itself ready to meet misbehavior, and finds quite a different call upon it. Something of this kind happened to Deronda. His first impression was one of pure pleasure and amusement at finding his sitting room transformed into an atelier strewed with miscellaneous drawings, and with the contents of two chests from Rome, the lower half of the windows darkened with baize, and the blonde Hans in his weird youth as the presiding genius of the littered place, his hair longer than of old, his face more whimsically creased, and his high voice as usual getting higher under the excitement of rapid talk. The friendship of the two had been kept up warmly since the memorable Cambridge time, not only by correspondence, but by little episodes of companionship abroad and in England, and the original relation of confidence on one side and indulgence on the other had been developed in practice, as is wont to be the case, where such spiritual borrowing and lending has been well begun. I knew you would like to see my casts and antiquities, said Hans, after the first hearty greetings and inquiries, so I didn't scruple to unlade my chests here. But I found two rooms at Chelsea not many hundred yards from my mother and sisters, and I shall soon be ready to hang out there, when they've scraped the walls and put in some new lights. That's all I'm waiting for. But you see, I don't wait to begin work. You can't conceive what a great fellow I'm going to be. The seed of immortality has sprouted within me. Only a fungoid growth, I dare say a growing disease in the lungs, said Deronda, accustomed to treat Hans in brotherly fashion. He was walking toward some drawings propped on the ledge of his bookcases, five rapidly sketched heads, different aspects of the same face. He stood at a convenient distance from them, without making any remark. Hans, too, was silent for a minute, took up his palette, and began touching the picture on his easel. What do you think of them? He said at last. The full face looks too massive, otherwise the likenesses are good, said Deronda, more coldly than was usual with him. No, it is not too massive, said Hans, decisively. I have noted that. There is always a little surprise when one passes from the profile to the full face. But I shall enlarge her scale for barrenness. I am making a Baroness series look at the sketches along there, and now I think of it, you are just the model I want for the Agrippa. Hans, still with pencil and palette in hand, had moved to Deronda's side while he said this, but he added hastily, as if conscious of a mistake, "No, no, I forgot. You don't like sitting for your portrait. Confound you. However, I've picked up a capital Titus. There are to be five in the series. The first is Baroness clasping the knees of Jessius Floris and beseeching him to spare her people. I've got that on the easel. Then, this, where she is standing on the Xystus with Agrippa, entreating the people not to injure themselves by resistance. Agrippa's legs will never do, said Deronda. The legs are good realistically, said Hans, his face creasing drolly. Public men are often shaky about the legs apostrophe their legs, the emblem of their various thought, apostrophe as somebody says in the rehearsal. But these are as impossible as the legs of Raffles Alcibiades, said Deronda. Then they are good ideally, said Hans. Agrippa's legs were possibly bad. I idealize that, and make them impossibly bad. Art, my genius, must intensify. But never mind the legs now. The third sketch in the series is Baroness exulting in the prospects of being Empress of Rome, when the news has come that Vespasian is declared emperor and her lover Titus his successor. You must put a scroll in her mouth, else people will not understand that. You can't tell that in a picture. It will make them feel their ignorance, then an excellent aesthetic effect. The fourth is Titus sending Baroness away from Rome after as he has shared his palace for 10 years, both reluctant, both sad invidus invidum, as Suetonius hath it. I found a model for the Roman brute. Shall you make Baroness look 50? She must have been that. No, no, a few mature touches to show the lapse of time. Dark-eyed beauty wears well, hers particularly. But now, here is the fifth. Baroness seated lonely on the ruins of Jerusalem. That is pure imagination. That is what ought to have been, perhaps was. Now, see how I tell a pathetic negative. Nobody knows what became of her, that is finally indicated by the series coming to a close. There is no sixth picture. Here Hans pretended to speak with a gasping sense of sublimity, and drew back his head with a frown, as if looking for a like impression on Deronda. I break off in the Homeric style. The story is chipped off, so to speak, and passes with a ragged edge into nothing lenient. Can anything be more sublime, especially in French? The vulgar would desire to see her corpse and burial, perhaps her will read, and her linen distributed. But now come, and look at this on the easel. I have made some way there. That beseeching attitude is really good, said Deronda, after a moment's contemplation. Why, you have been very industrious in the Christmas holidays, for I suppose you have taken up the subject since you came to London. Neither of them had yet mentioned Mira. No, said Hans, putting touches to his picture, I made up my mind to the subject before. I take that lucky chance for an augury, that I am going to burst on the world as a great painter. I saw a splendid woman in the Trastevere, the grandest women there are half Jewesses, and she set me hunting for a fine situation of a Jewess at Rome. Like other men of vast learning, I ended by taking what lay on the surface. I'll show you a sketch of the Trasteverina's head, when I can lay my hands on it. I should think she would be a more suitable model for Baroness, said Deronda, not knowing exactly how to express his discontent. Not a bit of it. The model ought to be the most beautiful Jewess in the world, and I have found her. Have you made yourself sure that she would like to figure in that character? I should think no woman would be more abhorrent to her. Does she quite know what you are doing? Certainly. I got her to throw herself precisely into this attitude. Little mother sat for Jessius Floris, and Mira clasped her knees. Here Hans went a little way off, and looked at the effect of his touches. I dare say she knows nothing about Baroness's history, said Deronda, feeling more indignation than he would have been able to justify. Oh, yes, she does, ladies' edition. Baroness was a fervent patriot, but was beguiled by love and ambition into attaching herself to the archenemy of her people. Whence the nemesis. Mira takes it as a tragic parable, and cries to think what the penitent Baroness suffered as she wandered back to Jerusalem and sat desolate amidst desolation. That was her own phrase. I couldn't find it in my heart to tell her I invented that part of the story. Show me your Tristeverina, said Deronda, chiefly in order to hinder himself from saying something else. Shall you mind turning over that folio? Said Hans. My studies of heads are all there, but they are in confusion. You will perhaps find her next to a crop-eared undergraduate. After Deronda had been turning over the drawings a minute or two, he said, they seem to be all Cambridge heads and bits of country. Perhaps I had better begin at the other end. No, you'll find her about the middle. I emptied one folio into another. Is this one of your undergraduates? Said Deronda, holding up a drawing. It's an unusually agreeable face. That. Oh, that's a man named Gaskin Rex Gaskin. An uncommonly good fellow, his upper lip too, is good. I coached him before he got his scholarship. He ought to have taken honors last Easter, but he was ill and has had to stay up another year. I must look him up. I want to know how he's going on. Here she is, I suppose, said Deronda, holding up a sketch of the Tristeverina. Ah, said Hans, looking at it rather contemptuously, too coarse. I was unregenerate then. Deronda was silent while he closed the folio, leaving the Tristeverina outside. Then clasping his coat collar, and turning toward Hans, he said, I dare say my scruples are excessive, Merrick, but I must ask you to oblige me by giving up this notion. Hans threw himself into a tragic attitude, and screamed, What, my series, my immortal Baroness series? Think of what you are saying, man destroying, as Milton says, not a life but an immortality. Wait before you answer, that I may deposit the implements of my art, and be ready to uproot my hair. Here Hans laid down his pencil and palette, threw himself backward into a great chair, and hanging limply over the side, shook his long hair over his face, lifted his hooked fingers on each side his head, and looked up with comic terror at Deronda, who was obliged to smile, as he said, Paint as many baronesses as you like, but I wish you could feel with me, perhaps you will, on reflection, that you should choose another model. Why? Said Hans, standing up, and looking serious again. Because she may get into such a position that her face is likely to be recognized. Mrs. Merrick and I are anxious for her, that she should be known as an admirable singer. It is right, and she wishes it, that she should make herself independent. And as he has excellent chances. One good introduction is secured already, and I am going to speak to Klezmer. Her face may come to be very well known, and well, it is useless to attempt to explain, unless you feel as I do. I believe that, if Mira saw the circumstances clearly, she would strongly object to being exhibited in this way, to allowing herself to be used as a model for a heroine of this sort. As Hans stood with his thumbs in the belt of his blouse, listening to this speech, his face showed a growing surprise melting into amusement, that at last, would have its way in an explosive laugh. But seeing that Deronda looked gravely offended, he checked himself to say, Excuse my laughing, Deronda. You never gave me an advantage over you before. If it had been about anything but my own pictures, I should have swallowed every word, because you said it. And so you actually believe that I should get my 5 pictures hung on the line in a conspicuous position, and carefully studied by the public? Zounds, man! Cider cup and conceit never gave me half such a beautiful dream. My pictures are likely to remain as private as the utmost hypersensitiveness could desire. Hans turned to paint again as a way of filling up awkward pauses. Deronda stood perfectly still, recognizing his mistake as to publicity, but also conscious that his repugnance was not much diminished. He was the reverse of satisfied either with himself or with Hans. But the power of being quiet carries a man well through moments of embarrassment. Hans had a reverence for his friend which made him feel a sort of shyness at Deronda's being in the wrong, but it were not in his nature to give up anything readily, though it were only a whim or rather, especially if it were a whim, and he presently went on, painting the while, but even supposing I had a public rushing after my pictures, as if they were a railway series including nurses, babies and bonnet boxes, I can't see any justice in your objection. Every painter worth remembering has painted the face he admired most, as often as he could. It is a part of his soul that goes out into his pictures. He diffuses its influence in that way. He puts what he hates into a caricature. He puts what he adores into some sacred heroic form. If a man could paint the woman he loves 1,000 times as the Stella Maris, to put courage into the sailors on board 1,000 ships, so much the more honor to her. Isn't that better than painting a piece of staring immodesty and calling it by a worshipful name? Every objection can be answered, if you take broad ground enough, Hans. No special question of conduct can be properly settled in that way, said Deronda, with a touch of peremptoriness. I might admit all your generalities, and yet be right in saying you ought not to publish Mira's face as a model for barrenness. But I give up the question of publicity. I was unreasonable there. Deronda hesitated a moment. Still, even as a private affair, there might be good reasons for your not indulging yourself too much in painting her from the point of view you mention. You must feel that her situation at present is a very delicate one, and until she is in more independence, she should be kept as carefully as a bit of Venetian glass, for fear of shaking her out of the safe place she is lodged in. Are you quite sure of your own discretion? Excuse me, Hans. My having found her binds me to watch over her. Do you understand me? Perfectly, said Hans, turning his face into a good-humored smile. Why, you have the very justifiable opinion of me that I am likely to shatter all the glass in my way and break my own skull into the bargain. Quite fair. Since I got into the scrape of being born, everything I have liked best has been a scrape either for myself or somebody else. Everything I have taken to heartily has somehow turned into a scrape. My painting is the last scrape, and I shall be all my life getting out of it. You think now I shall get into a scrape at home? No, I am regenerate. You think I must be over head and ears in love with Mira? Quite right, so I am. But you think I shall scream, and plunge and spoil everything? There you are mistaken excusably, but transcendently mistaken. I have undergone baptism by immersion. All takes care of me. Ask the little mother. You don't reckon a hopeless love among your scrapes then, said Deronda, whose voice seemed to get deeper as Hans's went higher. I don't mean to call mine hopeless, said Hans, with provoking coolness, laying down his tools, thrusting his thumbs into his belt, and moving away a little, as if to contemplate his picture more deliberately. My dear fellow, you are only preparing misery for yourself, said Deronda, decisively. She would not marry a Christian, even if she loved him. Have you heard her? Of course you have heard her speak of her people. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.